Hi, my name's Randy. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I want to thank everyone. I thank, I should say, Matt for inviting me to come here to share tonight. What I was like? Well, before coming to this fellowship, I was very self-centered, self-seeking, selfish, and dishonest and frightened person. A pretty irresponsible, judgmental, inconsiderate. I didn't really care about anyone but myself, and I really didn't care much about myself either. I didn't do anything for anyone else unless there was something in it for me. I came to Overeaters Anonymous on September 4th, 1986. I was 26 years old, and I had tried everything else. I had my first memory of compulsive overeating was when I was 4 or 5 years old. I was trying to steal honey off of a table in my aunt's table, and I got caught. And my first thought was not that I was not going to do this again, but the next time I wouldn't get caught. By the time I was in about fourth grade, I had already gone through several many diets. They begin to take me to different diet clubs and different diet doctors. Nothing seemed to work. The one of the diet doctors told me that I was 12 years old, that if I continued eating as I was, I should say, that I would be dead by age 25. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous thinking that I was living on borrowed time. By the time I hit high school, I was 400 pounds. By the time I graduated from high school, I was 450 pounds. And the only way that I knew that the amount that I weighed was because I would go to either a cattle farmer and weigh on the scale he would use for his cattle, or I would go to a recycling center and weigh on the scale to weigh heavy metals. So I had tried everything else. Nothing seemed to work, and, the very beginning of my compulsive overeating career, it was fun. It was fun to eat compulsively. It was fun stealing money to buy food or stealing food. I ate off the floor. I ate out of the garbage can. I ate food that was frozen. I ate food that was not cooked long enough. I ate food that would burn my mouth. I ate food that I knew that wasn't good, because I later got food sickness from it, food poisoning. In elementary school, I was known as the garbage can. I was teased. I was laughed at. There were things that my parents would try to do to get me to lose weight. My father would beat me. They would bribe me. I realized I had a problem, but that wasn't enough to stop from eating compulsively. As I said, I tried everything. Nothing seemed to work. And one day, just by happen chance, I came across a gentleman who told me about Overeaters Anonymous. And being a good compulsive overeater, I decided that I would wait maybe a month before I came, went there, because I expected certain things. One, I expected some kind of a diet. And so I figured I may as well eat up all the fattening food in my house before I went to the Overeaters Anonymous. And as I said, I had expectations what I was going to find there. So I climbed the stairs of the church. It was on a Thursday night at 7 o'clock in Elkhart, Indiana. And I got to the top of the stairs, and I went to the library where the meeting was being held. And I got to the threshold of the meeting, and the first word I heard was God. I was an atheist. And if I could have backed away from that door without them seeing me, I would have, because I did not want to go to any meeting when they were going to talk about God. And so all 450 pounds of me tried to tiptoe into the room to sit down. There was about four or five people. And for the first time in my life, I found out what my real problem was. I had thought it was food. Food was not my problem. Food was my solution. I heard them share, tell their stories just as I'm telling mine, and I immediately began to identify. I understood that void within myself, that nothing could fill, that spiritual void. I discovered on September 4th, 1986, that I didn't have a food problem. I had a living problem. I found out that I was not alone, that there were other people like me. And the other thing I discovered was that there was a way out. There was a way out. I expected, again, when I walked in there, I expected to see some scales at in the corner. I expected to see a diet. I expected to see a doctor or nurse. I expected to see someone giving me shots or some pills. I expected them to be asked me for lots of money, and I found none of that. And I was coming from a business standpoint, and so I kept looking around thinking, how in the world are they staying in business? And who is the heck is in charge of this thing? And so after the meeting was over, I got up and they pointed to the table where the literature was at, and I thought, this is where they're making their money. And I went over there, and the most expensive item on the table was the big book, and it was less than $5. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I kept looking for the diet. There was no diet. And so a gentleman came up from behind, and he said to me that he pointed the big book and said, that's the only book that you'll need. So I bought it, and he asked if I want to go to coffee. And I thought to myself, no, because it's Thursday night and that's my favorite night to watch TV, and so I need to go home. But I said yes. And we talked. We went to the coffee shop and talked. And I said, well, what's the catch? He goes, what do you mean? I said, you didn't give me a diet. I said, I don't care about your 12 steps. I don't care about your traditions. I don't care about your tools. All I want is the diet so I can leave and, get thin and leave and find a wife. And he says, well, we don't have any diet. And I said, well, I don't think this is going to work for me then. I said, because I need some kind of diet. And so we don't have one. He said, just keep coming back. And I said, the other thing is, I don't believe in God. I said, so you can keep your God to yourself. And he goes, well, we don't care what you believe in. You can believe anything you want, just so long as a power greater than yourself. And so I did. I kept coming back, and I learned that in the beginning, like I said, it was fun to eat compulsively. But at some point in my overeating career, I had to eat just to function. I couldn't deal with life. And at the very end of my overeating career, I was eating just for oblivion. I wanted just to pass out. I wanted just to wake up. I would wake up and I would have empty containers all around my bed. And I'm the kind of person also that I'm a sneak eater. I don't eat in front of other people. The big book defines everything that, for me. I discovered that very night that, that I have a an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And I could identify with that because all I thought about was eating compulsively. And so where I was going to eat, when I was going to eat, how much I was going to eat, I was eating nonstop. I didn't realize until I came here. But once I took that first compulsive bite, Katie barred the door. I was in the races, man. I was turn off the phone, close the blinds, turn on the TV, order my favorite foods or go to the store to buy my favorite foods. And I loved the way that food made me feel. I loved how it took away my problems temporarily. Food did for me what I could not do for myself. But at the end, it made me feel the way I liked. It says in the big book that, even though I know it's injurious to myself, I will go back time and time again because I cannot differentiate the truth from the false. That's the definition of insanity. I cannot see the truth. The obsession pushes out all truth out of my mind. The other thing is that, before I take that first compulsive bite, I am restless, irritable, and discontented. And I'm looking for that ease and comfort that food gives me. It also tells me that in the big book that, that when I honestly wanted to, I could not stop. I could not get on a diet and stay on a diet. But once I started to eat compulsively, I could not control the amount that I take. That's the definition of a compulsive overeater. The other thing that, I've discovered is that the elimination of my compulsive overeating is just the beginning. I have to get down to the cause condition. Leaving the overeating problem, set that aside for a moment, I have to find out what is it that is my real problem. And on page 52 of the big book, it tells me what my problem is. It says that I was having trouble with my personal relationships. I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. And I couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Those are the devilments. That's what my problem is. I have a living problem. And the other thing that I've discovered is that I have to go through a process. As I said, the first thing I have to, when I come here, I have to be completely hopeless. I have to be desperate to do anything it takes. Step zero says that I want what you people have, and I'm willing to go to any length to get it. That's step zero. So I have to come in here hopeless and desperate. Then I must be separated from the compulsive overeating. I cannot serve two gods. I cannot serve the master food and God at the same time. It's impossible. It's impossible for me to turn my will and my life over the care and protection to God and be eaten compulsively. It just doesn't work for me. So I have to separate myself from compulsive overeating. I begin to live the steps and the principles therein. What happens is I am changed by that process. And then I have a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. I lack the power to do this by myself. If I could do this by myself, I wouldn't be here. If all I could do is just read some philosophical book or something, that's exactly what I would do. But I can't. I need a power greater than myself. And the big book gives me all my answers. It tells me that where I'm going to find this power. Its main object is to help me find a power greater than myself that will relieve me of this obsession, because I can't do anything about the compulsive overeating as far as the allergy or the craving that it causes. But God gets between me and the obsession. It removes that obsession from me. God removes the obsession from me. What I've discovered, though, is that something I have to I can't do this. I have to give up. I have to see to my innermost self that I am a compulsive overeater. I have to, what I would say, self-sacrifice. In fact, Bill says that himself. Bill says that, I have to enlarge my spiritual growth. And the way that I do that is I sacrifice my time to people like me, sacrifice my time to God to be. Become an instrument and a channel for God. He says over and over again, he talks about self-sacrifice, that I have to give up myself. I'm not here to improve myself. I'm here to have God remove myself. The thing that I like is I go through these 12 steps. The first three steps to me is about being changed spiritually. The first step tells me that I have what my real problem is. My real problem is the second clause of that step, that I cannot manage life. I cannot be God. I cannot rely on self-reliance. I cannot run on self-will. The The second step tells me what my answer is. God. These are conclusions of the mind. The third step is just a decision to turn my thinking and my actions over to God, my will and my life over to God. I'm only making a decision in step three. Step four is when I begin to list the flaws within myself. I take an inventory of myself, just like I do in business. I find out those unsellable goods, those things that do not work for me, things that block me off from God and from other people. And then I have to humble myself. I need to share that information with another person like myself and God. And I'm going to get direction from this person. This person who's already gone through the steps is going to tell me exactly, point out the things within myself that I need to hear. And this fourth step is not something that I throw away, I burn, or anything like that. This is the key to my future. This is the list that I'm going to be using for the rest of the 12 steps. And then I move on to step six. Now that I have this list, now that I know these defects of character, I do what I call self-observation. It's not self-absorption as I used to have it beforehand, being self-centered. Now I take a more passive, a distant look at myself. I watch myself as I go through my day. Where am I still selfish? Where am I just still dishonest? And then I have a choice. I have a choice. When I recognize I'm doing this behavior, I have a choice. Am I willing to continue doing this behavior, or am I willing to let go of it? Am I ready to let go of this? And what helps me become motivated to do this, to let go of this? There's two things that motivate me. The first one, great pain. Great pain. It causes me pain. It causes not only me, but others around me. It causes chaos in my life. The other option is great love, desire, attraction. I'm pulled to this spiritual way of life. So I'm being pushed to change, to be changed, or I'm being pulled to be changed. And then when I'm ready to let go of this defect of character, then and only then can I offer it to God. And I don't believe that, you know, that how I do this is that when God removes this defect of character, it means I stop practicing it. And once I stop practicing lying, automatically, then I'm telling the truth. I don't have to try to be truthful. I don't have to be nice or good or any of those things. As long as I stop practicing these defects, it happens automatically. When I take the defective item off the shelf, it is automatically replaced with the opposite. And as I go through this process of up to the step seven, which steps four through seven is where I'm being changed mentally or emotionally. I am being changed. By the time I'm ready for step eight, I am not the same person I was. Now I begin to have compassion for other people because I realize those things that I have within myself, other people are experiencing too.
3 minutes, please.
I see them as sick people, just like myself. And so in eight and nine, I'm being changed physically. And it's not my body so much as being changed. It's my relationship with everyone around me. When I make those amends, and it's not just saying I'm sorry. When I make those amends, I'm mending the fences. I am trying to change our relationship, my relationship with the other person. And so steps one through three, I'm being changed spiritually. Steps four through seven, I'm being changed emotionally and mentally. Steps eight and nine, I'm being changed physically. And then 10, 11, and 12, I'm being rocketed to a fourth dimension where I harmonize the spiritual, the emotional, and the physical. And so in step 10, I'm continued taking those inventories. I'm still taking a look at who I am as a person, recognizing those flaws, those things that block me from God. And when I see that I'm practicing again, then I make the amends immediately. I talk to my sponsor about it. Step 11, now that I know my source, I know the power greater than myself. Now I want a better connection with that God. So now I begin to practice prayer and meditation as never before. And step 12 is broken into three parts. Having gone through those first 11 steps, I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Second, so that's the promise. Second part is the cost. I have to give this away. I cannot keep it unless I give it away. And the last part is the challenge to practice the spiritual way of life in all of my affairs. And what I've discovered, there isn't a part of life that's spiritual. It is all spiritual. There is nowhere that God does not exist. God is everywhere. God is, what I've discovered from the big book, God is in each and every one of us. Each and every one of us are children of God. I am really grateful to be a compulsive eater. I'm so grateful that I've been given the spiritual way of life. And when I practice it, it seems to make life better. I pass.